Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, welcome to another installment of Birdlands Night. Orioles getting the victory today, 5-2 over the Texas Rangers from Arlington in that new ballpark that kind of looks like a sardine can from the outside, but for all intents and purposes, it serves its purpose there. I am Paul Valley, the host of the Bat Around, being joined by Joe DiBasilio today here on Birdland Tonight. And Joe, fun game to talk about today. Orioles get that 5-2 victory. Jorge Lopez looked like Cy Young to start the game. He retired the first 9 batters on 34 pitches with 6 strikeouts. The first 4 innings, 54 pitches, 8 strikeouts, no walks, no hits. And then he comes, I'm sorry, 1 walk, no hits. What did you see from him in those first 4 innings that kind of gave you hope for the remainder of the season?
Paul, every time you and I host a show together, the Orioles win.
Yeah, we need to do it more often.
How do you explain that? He threw a pitch. I'm trying to think what inning it was. I want to say the 4th inning. It might have been the 3rd. It was a strikeout pitch, 97 sinker. Or maybe, was that in the 3rd inning, Paul? It's running together for me. But
he had 96 mile an hour. I think all of his fastballs are technically sinkers. But he had a 96 mile an hour fastball in the 2nd inning that he struck a guy out with at the top of the zone. He had another one in the 3rd or 4th inning that broke down and away. It was either down and away or down and in, but it went to the right side of the plate at 97. I know which one you're talking about. I can't remember if it was on the righty or a lefty. But he was nasty those first 4 innings.
Right, and that's it. That's what went through my head. I was like, wow. So I was impressed. You know, of course, we discussed this, but you would want to see him go a little further than 5. But I liked what I saw from him. It was fun to watch, fun to root for. So I was impressed. Good outing.
The key thing that he was doing in this start that he didn't do in his last start against the Red Sox is he was getting ahead of hitters routinely. And then when you saw when he didn't get ahead of hitters, and that's the first 2 batters of the 5th inning in Dahl and Solak, he gives up back-to-back homers. Just, he falls behind Dahl 2-0, falls behind Solak 2-1, gives up back-to-back home runs to right field. The second one, Anthony Santander almost made a spectacular catch, just missed it just over his outstretched glove. But he proved it today that if you get ahead of hitters, you can pitch at this level, and that's something that's going to be super important, not just for him, but for the entire Orioles pitching staff moving forward.
Absolutely. Pitching, even coming out of last series, has been decent. You know, that certainly hasn't been the hang-up. Nice to see the bats come around tonight a little bit and help them out. You know, and it gives us something to watch these young guys come out and look good on the mound. You know, it's enjoyable from that perspective to be looking forward to that, to see, you know, even a guy like Matt Harvey the other night, Paul, like, what's he going to do? What's he going to come out here and do? So to see Lopez come out and have another good outing, good stuff. It's good to watch.
Yeah, and, you know, Matt Harvey, he's kind of this guy. He gives you 4 2/3, 5 2/3, and then kind of, you don't want to say the wheels fall off because he's only given up a couple runs in each of his 3 starts. Now, he was tagged for more than that in the home opener, but he left with only 2 runs on his docket. Lopez, and I think this is more so Lopez coming out of the game. He pitched well, fell behind the 2 guys in the 5th, managed to get through the 5th inning after giving up those 2 home runs without giving up anything else. And I think that Brandon Hyde just kind of wanted to get him out of that game feeling good, having more confidence, because the last start was a blow-up against the Red Sox. Nobody pitched well. Every pitcher that pitched in that game, except for Paul Fry, whoever the last pitcher was in that game, every other pitcher gave up a home run in that game. So he wanted to give his guys some confidence. today and taking Lopez out after five strong innings with eight strikeouts, only two hits allowed. That's how you build confidence for your pitching staff. You do want to see them get deeper into the games. But again, innings are at a premium right now because you had that 60-game truncated season last year. You're going to need a lot of arms. But it's still early in the year, still pitching in April. And I know that they're down in Texas where it's warmer and they're indoors. But you want to keep guys' arms healthy for the long haul. So I understand it. I do expect him as the days and weeks and months go by to give his pitchers a little bit longer of a leash as long as they're earning it. And Jorge Lopez did a lot today to go towards earning deeper starts.
And you're right. And that's something that I need to keep in mind too, just watching this, is that it is only April. You know, and a lot of fans, I think, are looking at this season through a different lens because you're not necessarily worried about the wins and losses in the sense of, the course of 162. Obviously, we're rooting for wins because it's more fun. But when you're looking at it through the lens of the rebuild and, you know, kind of analyzing, overanalyzing each guy, thinking about what they can do long term, I think that's where, at least for me, sometimes it's easy to get caught up in. Man, I'd like to see him go seven innings, especially only at 75 pitches. But you're right, it is only April. So I think it is, when you think about that, then of course, yeah, let's pump the brakes, take it easy on him a little bit, and, you know, be ready for next time.
Well, and again, also factoring into it, like I said a minute ago, is the fact that his first start, he leaves having only allowed one run against the Yankees, and then Armstrong comes in, walks a guy with the bases loaded, and then gives up a grand slam, and the next thing you know, he's got four or five runs on his stat line. And then his last start, he blew up against the Red Sox. So it's, if he had had two really good starts, his first two starts, maybe Hyde lets him go six or lets him go seven in this start. But he wants him to feel good. And he pitched well enough to deserve the opportunity to win that game. I think that's what was at the forefront, maybe even more so than the innings limit for Brandon Hyde. Now, Josh Soroka, the founder of this program, he says, nice to play nine. And it absolutely is. The Orioles just had a four-game series where they played two doubleheaders, four games, 29 innings. Man, we played on a Wednesday night baseball league where we played seven innings a game, and that's because of time constraints and field rentals and stuff like that, Joe. Major League Baseball, it ain't baseball, not playing a nine-inning game. Now, the way the Orioles swung the bats in those games, they probably weren't going to win the games, even if they were nine innings. Tough go there for them, only getting to play 29 innings and losing three of those four games. And then the way they started the game today, I have not been a big fan of the Orioles' approach at the plate this season, to say the least. And then you see today, Mullins strikes out on four pitches, including a breaking ball in the dirt in the first inning. And then Santander on the second pitch of the at-bat grounds out. And all of a sudden, you're sitting there and you're like, oh man, six pitches, and they've already got two outs. Then DJ Stewart comes up, and DJ Stewart is batting third in this lineup because right now, aside from Cedric Mullins, despite his two poor strikeouts, he did have a nice game. Aside from Cedric Mullins, DJ Stewart's the only person in this lineup who knows how to have an at bat right now. He saw eight pitches in that at bat. He eventually struck out, but he's batting third in this lineup because he can take walks, he can get his base hits, and as we saw, he can put the ball out of the ballpark like he did tonight. But the Orioles, after that first inning, I thought their approach looked much, much better. I was happier to see some deeper at-bats. They got to Fulton Evans. They made him throw 82 pitches in five innings, seven hits, five runs off of him. In those middle innings, the second through the fifth innings, what were you seeing from this team that maybe was a little bit different than what we've seen in the past?
Well, and I think I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask you about that, Paul, with just the way that this season has gone at the plate so far. Like you said, you have Mullins, who goes two for four, who's been so hot. He went two for four tonight, and his batting average dipped. He left the game hitting .396, which is down a little bit. But outside of him, I do think Santander has had some good at-bats. He just hasn't been able to, you know, to finish them off. You know, he's battled in a number of games, had some long at-bats, a couple games ago when he's up 3-1 and then lays down the bunt, which he was getting grief for, but if it would have worked, you know, it's one of those deals. But anyway, I have to answer your question, the approach through those innings I thought was much better. Now, after that, after we got out of the fifth, I don't think they had another hit the rest of the, rest of the game.
Colby Allard was absolutely exceptional.
He was.
Three innings, five strikeouts on 45 pitches. He was very good today.
But big picture, I don't know, and this is, Paul, what I wanted to bring up with you. I don't know, when do you start to panic and start thinking like, geez, this, there's a lot of guys in this lineup that are going to be flirting with 200 all season long. Even a guy like Mancini, just, he's barreling up some balls, but he continues to, I mean, what's his average down to now? 150? Somewhere around 150. At what point, where are we at, Paul? At what point do we say, uh-oh?
Well, these guys are going to get hot. And I've watched Santander barrel up some balls and run into some bad luck. In his second at bat today, well, you go back to the game, one of the games, the first game of the doubleheader on Thursday, he absolutely barreled up a ball, and it went right back to the pitcher. It was actually the second game of the doubleheader. The tying run's on second base with nobody out and DJ Stewart, and he barrels one up, but hits it on a low line back to the pitcher. He catches it and turns a double play to get anybody would have been dead to rights at second base on that ball, was hit so hard. Then tonight in his second at bat, he barrels up another one, hits it hard back up to the pitcher's mound, hits the mound, slows up in time for the second baseman to get to it on a ball that should have been, for all intents and purposes, up the middle and possibly driven in a run. He did get the runner over to third base with now only one out after that ground out. I actually liked what I saw from Santander tonight. His first at bat, he was a little over aggressive, but the second at bat, he had a ground ball to get Mullins over the third base. His third at bat, he had a deep sacrifice fly to center field to score Galvis after he had doubled and reached third base on a base hit by Mullins. It was team at bats for Santander, and this offense is going to go as far as Santander carries them. He's going to be hitting in the middle of their lineup. It's important for him to hit well and produce runs when they're out there for him to produce. You know, he had a great approach in spring training, led the team with 10 walks, had a 40.87 on base percentage, and he has just two walks early on this season. Right now, we're all concerned about the offense, especially when you look at Trey Mancini. Santander's a microcosm of the whole thing. They're just not drawing their walks. And then you look at a guy like Trey Mancini, who was struggling. He's got three home runs in the last seven games, but he went 0-for-4 today with four strikeouts. He leads the majors in grounding into double plays. Looks lost at the plate. He's been a victim, man, of chasing that high and tight fastball that he's always chased throughout his career. But a lot of times you see him get the hands in and get the barrel to the ball on those, and he's just not doing it right now. He will come around. He's got the track record, and he's proven that he can do that. I just think he's putting a lot of pressure on his own shoulders. I think that he's trying to do too much coming back from colorectal cancer, and he wants to prove to everybody that he's still the same player. I think we're going to see him get the day off tomorrow, personally.
So you're telling me to be patient?
Yeah.
Is that your advice?
A long-winded answer to your question.
Okay. So just wait.
But it's hard, man. It's hard because we're all fans, right? We're all fans, and you want this team. We get it. They're in the middle of a rebuild, but you still live and die with every win and every loss.
Right, right.
So it's hard to sit there and be patient. But there's some good things. Freddie Galvis homered in the game yesterday, and then he had a triple in his first at-bat, scored a run, double in his second at-bat, scored another run. So he looks like he's starting to break out of things. Rio Ruiz hit an opposite field home run on Oppo Taco that was a no-doubter that he absolutely pimped coming out of that box. So it was
Stewart. Nice. Stewart gets his first homer.
Stewart, man. Stewart might be my favorite player on the team right now. The guy.
You and I both like him.
The guy has trouble catching up to a 97, 98 mile an hour fastball, but when he gets the barrel to the ball, he does a lot of damage. His contact to damage ratio to me has got to be up there. He gets on base. He has good at bats. I mean, we mentioned that 8-pitch at bat in the first inning. It was nice to see him get that home run. And, you know, he's batting third in this lineup for a reason. So Orioles offense kind of breaks out a little bit today. The pitching was fantastic. Lopez, again, five innings pitched, two hits, two runs, eight strikeouts, and just a one walk. And then the bullpen comes in, and man, the bullpen was good tonight. Four innings pitched, two hits, no runs, and seven strikeouts with no walks in those four innings from the Orioles bullpen. Paul Fry, man, we were worried about him, and he's got himself a 1.59 ERA right now. In the inning and two-thirds, he struck out three batters.
Bullpen did good. Did great tonight. You had Cesar Houdini Valdez again getting the job done. I was impressed with the bullpen. And that's good to see because they have not been impressive outside of a guy or two so far this season. So good to see a clean bill from them tonight.
Yeah, it was nice to see them bounce back after kind of costing their team the game in game one of that doubleheader yesterday. I mean, they were leading that game 2-0 in the fifth inning, and then Tanner Scott couldn't hold the lead. Well, Harvey gives up the two-run homer in the fifth, and then Tanner Scott gives up the two runs in the sixth because he couldn't throw his fastball for strikes. He threw 11 fastballs in that sixth inning. In that sixth inning. And only two of them were strikes. He threw nine balls of those 11 fastballs, so he's thrown nothing but sliders. Crawford sits on one. But we're not talking about that game. We're talking about this game. The bullpen much better today.
Dan chiming in here. Go ahead, Paul.
It's hard, man. We're so used to – I mean, you go from John Miller to – and Fred Manfra to Joe Angel and Jim Hunter, who has been discourteous to me recently, so I won't talk too much about him.
Was he? No, we'll have to talk about that on the next show.
We're not going to get into it, man. I'm not gonna drag a dude through the mud. But anyway,
who was on the radio tonight? I was watching on TV. Who was on the call?
Jeff Arnold and Brett Hollander. They've been doing a lot of the games for the Orioles recently, and I like those guys. I think that they do a good job. The problem is that – so John Miller and Joe Angel, they had those iconic voices, right, and those iconic calls. And Joe Angel was famous for always pronouncing somebody's name right, and we don't get that a lot these days. Kevin Brown does a nice job of it on the TV side of things, but it's hard to connect to people that you don't know, that you only saw on a truncated seat with no fans. A lot of times they're not broadcasting these games when the Orioles are on the road. They're doing it from Camden Yards. So it's a little difficult to connect because of a fly ball. Then they have to wait to see what happens instead of seeing it in person. It's just one of those things. And you guys will connect eventually. They're still getting their feet under them, and they're going to get better. We're going to appreciate them more. They do a solid job, and they're all professionals. And they're all really good people, too.
And I hear what Ann's saying. I feel the same. You know, it is hard to connect, but like Paul says, we'll get there. Those are short.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Short season last year. New voices. It's always tough with change, but stick with them, man, because that's all we got. So we got to learn to connect with them.
Yeah. I miss Gary Thorne from Steve. It's funny, my fiance and I were talking about that watching the game today, that Gary Thorne just had this propensity for bringing levity to some of these games. And, you know, in a game where the Orioles were pretty much in control throughout, there wasn't much need for levity. But Gary Thorne had this thing about him. And when we're hearing Scott Garceau, you know, he even alluded to it in the broadcast that, you know, they're not at the stadium. They're watching it on the same broadcast that we're watching, having to call the plays that way, that it's more difficult, you know. And Gary Thorne will probably be struggling with it too right now. So I think that we need to give these guys a little bit more time. Once we get back to a sense of normalcy, and we're headed there, you know, once they get to go to these other stadiums, get to call games live in the ballpark, I think that we're going to see them get better. We need to give them a little bit of time because it's unusual circumstances for everybody, not just them.
It's hard. It's sterile for them. You know, Josh chimes in here, just that, you know, having to watch remotely. And it is, that's, they feed off the crowd just like we do watching the game and just like the players do. So no doubt, you know, as we get back to that, we'll start seeing that, hopefully, that intensity, that levity kind of return. Because yeah, that adds to the fun for us too.
Yeah, and the other thing that you have to realize is that it's hard to broadcast games for a losing ball club. And Joe Angel, he went through that 115 loss season, then he said, you know what, I'm done. I'm out. And the Orioles lost another 108 games, and it takes a pro's pro. And not that these people aren't pros, but you know, I watched every pitch and every inning of that game on Sunday, and it was tough, man. It was one of the ugliest games I've watched. It was hard to watch the Orioles get their brains bashed in, and I had to watch every inning of it, you know. And these guys have to do that for every single game. I had to do it for one, and I wanted to, like, go take a break or take a nap or something like that. These guys have to do it for 162 games. So I'm sure that as hard as it is for us to watch this, it's even harder for them to have to, you know, analyze these games and put a positive spin on things and do it day in and day out for 6 months. So things are gonna, as the team gets better, we're going to get better with the broadcasts. And I think that we're going to see things that we really start to enjoy once the team starts playing better baseball.
Agreed.
Yeah. So the Orioles go out tonight. They beat the Texas Rangers 5-2, really good pitching on both sides. It's funny, man. It was these two teams led the majors in strikeouts coming in. Orioles 135, the Rangers 134. And then no big surprise then, 26 strikeouts between the two teams today. The Orioles struck out 15 Rangers. The Rangers struck out 11 Orioles. And it was nice to see the Orioles only struck out 6 times in each game against the Mariners. Now, it's 24 strikeouts in 29 innings, but it's better than what we've been seeing, where we watch them strike out 10-plus times every game for about an 8-game stretch. And they kind of got back to it tonight. They played well in the middle innings. And then that Rangers bullpen, another rebuilding ball club, that Rangers bullpen kind of shut them down. But I think that we're going to see less strikeouts. But it's just entertaining to watch these two teams that have such a propensity to strike out go out there and whiff 26 times tonight.
Yeah, and as you look, of course, across the league the last 3 or 4 years, you know, obviously everybody's striking out more. It's hard. It's hard to watch. It is such a personal for me pet peeve watching a team that strikes out so much. You know, not that they're trying to or anyone is, but it is so just frustrating to not have any movement, you know, on the base paths or anything. It's just a lost out. And I'm hoping that we continue to see this regression, you know, to decrease the strikeouts as the season goes on. These guys get more bats underneath them, change their approach a little bit, because it's hard to watch. I don't like it.
You look at that you look at that 2016 Orioles team, and they started the season 7-0, but the offense kind of struggled at the outset of that 2016 season. And then mid-April, they take a trip down to Texas. They end up having a 9-run seventh inning where Mark Trumbo hit 2 home runs in the inning. It kind of jump-started their season a little bit. It jump-started that offense, and then they kind of really got things going. I remember watching them in 2015. The offense kind of struggled to get going. And then on Mother's Day, they pounded out like 6 home runs, scored like 12 runs in a win, and really, really jump-started the offense. So I think as the weather starts to warm up, the Orioles have some power in their lineup. Mancini's not going to hit 151 all year. Santander is not going to hit, 191 all year, or 196 all year. So, and on the inverse of things, you know, Mullins isn't going to hit 396 all year. You know what I mean? So these bats will even out. They'll start to score more runs, and I think that this trip to Texas could be the start of that, although they do go up against Dane Dunning, who has a solid arm for Texas down there. So, and the Orioles seem to struggle with young up-and-coming pitchers. When you look at Nick Pivetta, and you look at who was the guy, who was the second starter for the Red Sox in that series in Baltimore, or I'm sorry, the series in Boston. I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
I can't remember it either.
But he was like the 17th overall pick in the draft in 2017 or 2014 or something like that. But and then with Colby Allard, who was the 14th overall pick in the 2015 draft, they seem to struggle with these young first round draft picks who are supposed to be big arms coming up. Struggle with Marco Gonzalez the other day. Was it
Eovaldi?
No. Eovaldi's been around for a while. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. If you find it.
Unimportant at this juncture.
Yeah, but the whole point of that is that the Orioles seem to struggle with these young stud pitchers. So tomorrow could be a tough one, or maybe they come out and they swing the bats well. That remains to be seen. It's going to be Dean Kramer going tomorrow night on short rest. Only threw 54 pitches in his last start. Had that 8-pitch first inning, Joe, and then he retired, I think, the first 7 batters that he faced. And then the wheels fell off in the third inning. He ends up giving up 4 runs in that third inning. Dean Kramer, how long do you think his leash is? Do you think that he has a few more starts before Hyde starts to worry, or do you think it's kind of put up or shut up at this point?
No, he has a few more starts. His early struggles are there. I don't know if there's anyone that they're ready to turn to long term. I mean, Dean Kramer is one of their young arms. So this is a rebuild, right? You're going to struggle. You're going to work through your pain, your growing pain. So he's got a leash there. He's one that certainly rooting for, and I'm hoping he has a good start tomorrow. I'm wondering who are we going to see come up to from the taxi squad to maybe replace somebody that's not hitting, just to maybe inject some life. Who do you think? Is there anyone that we might see coming up?
Well, the only people right now that are struggling above and beyond, it's really Trey Mancini. He's having the most struggles out of anybody in the lineup right now. You're not going to replace him. You're not going to replace Severino. I think Ruiz. For some reason, these guys absolutely love Rio Ruiz. So excuse me. So he's not going anywhere. And you have to remember, Austin Hayes is expected back either Sunday or Tuesday. So when he comes back, you're probably going to see McKenna go. I think that these guys are on the practice squad. And I actually wrote this in my notes for the bat around for tomorrow. You have Yosmiel Diaz, Isaac Max, and Richie Martin on that taxi squad. They're more so there in case somebody gets hurt, like what was the case of Hayes in the third game of the year. They're not going to come up to replace anybody right now, especially when you only have a 3-man bench. Josh Soroka says, bring up Richie Martin. Galvis is struggling. Galvis' defense hasn't been what we expected it to be, but the bat's coming around. He had a double and a triple today, a homer yesterday, and I think he had another base hit yesterday. So the bat's starting to come around. His defense just needs to be better. I don't think that you trade the offensive potential for Galvis for the defensive potential of Richie Martin when defensively – Richie Martin might make more flashy plays, but I think Galvis will catch more baseballs if that makes sense.
What about Mountcastle? He's not going anywhere. Just got to work through it up here.
Yeah, he's got to work through it. He the thing with Mountcastle, he didn't strike out today. He came into that Seattle series leading the majors with 17 strikeouts, and now he struck out just twice in the last 5 games. He's making contact. Got a little unlucky today. Got under some baseballs, but there was an at bat that I saw. In the first game against the Mariners in that first doubleheader, where he laid off some high fastballs that he's been chasing, and I tweeted out Mountcastle's about to send one to the moon because I could see his patience. And then literally as soon as I hit send, he doubled to the wall in left field. And then he had a nice little hitting streak there. Mountcastle's bat's coming around. You're going to see him get hot. Maybe it'll be the warm weather in Texas that gets him going. But that dude's about to take off, and I think that the Orioles know he's too good of a hitter, and his approach has gotten better. He's really cut down on the strikeouts the last 5 games in particular, that they're going to give him as long a leash as possible because he'll end up being the best hitter on that team.
I hope so. Waiting for it.
Ephraim Steve said, I like watching Mountcastle trying. I like watching Mountcastle play. The guy's got a pure swing. He's a professional hitter. And when the season's over, his numbers are going to be there. You got to remember, it's still just, what is it, April 16th? It's still just April 16th, guys. You know, we are 2 weeks into this season, barely 2 weeks into this season. So It's hard because we watch these games and we live and die. Like I said, we live and die with everything the Orioles do. But we got to remember, they're 2 weeks into the season. And the Kansas City Royals are leading the AL Central, for Pete's sake. The Seattle Mariners are leading the AL West. None of this stuff matters right now. It's what's going to happen in May, June, July. And these guys are going to – Mancini's numbers, they're going to be there. Santander, Mountcastle, their numbers are all going to be there. So – and then one last thing from Ephraim Steve. How many more years we got to pay Chris Davis? I only put this
forever, Ephraim. Forever. They're never not going to pay him.
This comment up because we haven't talked about Chris Davis, and thank God we haven't. But look, I think he's played his last game with the Orioles. They have to pay him this year. They have to pay him next year unless he retires. And they're going to cut bait. He's not going to play this year. And they have to pay him at least $1.8 million a year until he's 53 years old. So he's, what, 35 now, 34, 35? So another 18 years, Steve, is how long they got to pay him, another 18 years. So get used to it. He's the Bobby Bonilla of the Baltimore Orioles. So,
hey, Paul, don't tell the Yankees fans that it's only 2 weeks into the season. They were throwing batteries or something onto the field tonight. Did you see that?
I did not see that. I'm sure I'll see.
I don't know if it was batteries. It was they were throwing stuff onto the field.
Well, they were getting their doors blown off by the Rays last I saw. They lost to the Rays tonight. What was the final score? 8-2.
8-2.
Yankees are 5-8. Look, the Yankees, and that's another thing. That's another it's too early scenario. The Yankees are not going to be finish this year 5-8. The Rays at 6-8, they're not going to finish under 500 this year, you know. And just like the Red Sox, everybody thought the Red Sox were terrible, and they rattle off 9 wins. They seem like they're doing it on both sides of the baseball. It's way too early to make judgments on this season. Talk to me at the end of May, beginning of June, when things really start to get going. Teams are still getting their feet on their legs under them. Josh Soroka said at one point in this, pitching is dominating across the league, and they talked about potentially in the Atlantic League, that independent league, moving the mound back a foot. And they're going to do that this year because strikeouts are an all-time number at an all-time high. And that's A, because half the pitchers throw 100 miles an hour, and B, all the hitters are so consumed by launch angle and just hitting the home run that it's all or nothing. You know, the three true outcome baseball, walks, strikeouts, and home runs have never been more prevalent than they have been in the last 3 years. It's just one of those things where we kind of got to sit back and not make too much out of things. You know, it's just too early.
Sure, sure. I mean, it's like we said previously, it's not just the O's. It's across the league. It has been. It's a total paradigm shift in the game from these kids coming up, you know, in travel leagues and certainly the college level where they're teaching the launch angle, they're teaching home runs because that's what gets them noticed. And you know, they carry that with them, which allowed them to be strikeout less, certainly at those levels. But then when they get to the pro level, you got to take the power with the immense amount of strikeouts. Because like you said, everybody's throwing 97, 98. So it's a different, totally different shift and outlook from that perspective. And I'll be interested, too, to see how that works, moving the mound back a foot. Strikeouts, you know, it's gonna infuse more offense.
I was watching a video of Grayson Rodriguez pitching at the alternate site, down at minor league spring training from the other day. And he was throwing a fastball that would start out at it started out at max velocity was 101 across his plate at 96. So just in that 60 feet, it loses 5 miles an hour off the fastball. You move the mound back a foot, that fastball becomes even more hittable. So it's, you know, it could be something that works. I don't know that it's going to stick. The mound hasn't been moved in 127 years, I think I saw. So, I don't know. I don't know why they keep trying to fix baseball. I don't think it's broken. You know, just go out there and play the damn game.
Yeah, who knows? Because, you know, they haven't had runners starting on second base either. So, I think they're desperate to do weird things to get what they're after. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, they keep trying to do different things to make this game, you know, to make this game more relatable to certain markets. Well, you make it more relatable by marketing your best players like Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout and Fernando Tatis and nobody talks about Juan Soto outside of Washington and Baltimore. And that dude's the best hitter on the planet. We hear about Acuna because he does crazy things, but Juan Soto might be even a better player. Baseball's real problem is that they don't market their players correctly. Once they start doing that, they're going to get more people watching the games because they'll be able to relate to these young, exciting players. Look, man, we've done about 39 minutes or 35 minutes after the countdown on here today, so I think we should probably kind of wrap things up here. Orioles get a nice victory to start out that series down in Texas. 5-2 today. Tomorrow's Dean Kramer facing off on a Saturday night against Dane Dunning. Any closing thoughts for this show today, Joe?
Another enjoyable show with you, Paul. I look forward to following the rest of the series and tune in tomorrow night for another Birdland tonight.
Yeah, me too, man. I hope I didn't dominate the mic here too much. I kind of go off on tangents because this is I love talking Orioles baseball. So feel free to give me the let's wrap it up sign.
Your voice is soothing. I enjoy it.
Oh, well, thank you. You're the first person in my life to ever say that, so I certainly appreciate it. All right, guys, I'm Paul Valley. This is Joe DiBasilio. That's going to do it for us here on Birdland Tonight. Tune in tomorrow night when we have two more great hosts. Not sure who they are right now, but I know they're going to do a great job. We'll talk to you guys next time. Go O's.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants. They all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.